Well, that's cute, and we are not above using cute. We are so grateful for all of you who serve in Wombaland, who get down on the floor with those kids and love them and help to write their stories at such an early age. And for those of you that just continue to work with these kids as they move up from Wombaland to Upstreet, so much work goes on in there, so much hard work. And you guys do an amazing job of developing relationships. And then as a father of teenagers, it's so personal for me to say thank you for those of you that work with middle school students and high school students, such a critical age. And for all of you who create environments all around this church, we just want to take today and say thank you and celebrate you and have some fun. It's just kind of a lighthearted way for us to celebrate Cinco de Mayo and really want to celebrate you and everything that you've done. And I also want to take a minute to say thank you for all of your prayers and support for Steffi and I over the last 7 months. Some of you, I realized I was in one of our newest small groups a few weeks ago, and no one in the small group knew that I had cancer. They just thought I was a bald guy with no eyebrows and no eyelashes. And I realized we haven't talked about it a lot in this room, but we just finished 6 months of chemotherapy, and very glad to be done, yes, and very glad to be cancer-free. So we are grateful that God has, for every day that he gives us. And also so much respect for those of you that have gone through something similar, and many of you have gone through physical trials that are so much worse, and it's just a whole new level of respect for all of you and appreciation for you. But thank you so much as a church for loving on us and supporting us so well over the past 7 months or so. So we're celebrating our volunteers today, and we're also celebrating this fun thing called Cinco de Mayo, which is a great holiday because every American loves Cinco de Mayo because they get cheap Coronas on Cinco de Mayo, but we really have no idea what the holiday is. I've heard so many people say that it's Mexican Independence Day. No, it's not Mexican Independence Day. It actually celebrates a victory by this ragtag group of Mexican guerrillas back in 1862, where they defeated the French. And it wasn't the final decisive battle in the entire war, but it was very, very significant because the French, up to this battle, the French had not lost a battle in 50 years. They were the superior force by far. They outnumbered the Mexicans 2-1. They had better weaponry, better training, and yet the Mexicans won this battle, and it was significant because it marked the end of European dominance in the Western Hemisphere. So it's a big deal, and it's a fun battle to celebrate. But I think the reason that we all love celebrating a battle like that, the reason that a battle like that gets, you know, celebrated 100 or 150 years later, is because everybody loves a good underdog story. Everybody loves it when we hear about someone who is up against seemingly impossible odds and they win anyway. You know, they seem like they were just relegated to this life of insignificance, and yet they overcome and they play a significant role in the story that's written about the world around them. And we just think that's really cool. We love that. One of my favorite movies is Rudy. Rudy's a story about a kid who just loves football, but he's not as big as the other football players. He's not as fast as the other football players. He's not as talented as the other football players, but he's got grit and he's got determination and he's scrappy. And the other football players can't help but cheer for him, and the crowd can't help but cheer for Rudy. He's the underdog and everybody loves him. We used to live in Indiana. Basketball is a really big deal in Indiana. And we had friends that every year would watch the movie Hoosiers. It's this great movie about a small town school who has to go up against the biggest schools in the state for the state championship in basketball, and how this little country school with this ragtag team of basketball players manages to kind of rally everyone together and accomplish something that's pretty amazing. As a matter of fact, recently, a lot of us were cheering for a little college team from Fort Myers, Florida in the March Madness tournament. Because there's something about the little guy going up against the big guy with their spirit and their determination that just makes us want to cheer for the underdog. We love to see someone who's bound for insignificance rise up and accomplish something significant in their world. And so we get fired up about the underdog stories. As a matter of fact, we often hear these, you know, the sportscasters will say, it's a David and Goliath story. And it makes you wonder, like, do they realize that that's an actual story that actually took place in the Bible? We're going to look at that story in a little bit. But I want you to think about your life and in your world and what it's meant for you to be the underdog at different times in your journey. Maybe for you growing up, it was sports. And you wanted so badly to accomplish greatness in the realm of athletics. But you know, you just didn't have what the other students had. Maybe you had it for a little while, but then as you know, you aged and the competition got more difficult, you realized, man, I don't know if I have what it takes to make the team anymore. Or maybe you're like me and you made the team, but you just rode the bench. You know, you were a cheerleader that had a front row seat. And you always aspired for greatness, you always hoped for more, but it was just out of your reach. Maybe for you it was academics. You know, you worked really hard. You had dreams of solving the world's problems someday through academic work, and yet no matter how hard you studied, it seemed like B's were the best you could do, and it was so frustrating because you had friends around you and it seemed like they hardly even put in the time, but they got straight A's, and so academics were a frustration for you. Maybe for you, it's in the world of social connections. And you have friends and you wish you could be like them. They seem to just float in and out of conversations. They make everyone laugh. They feel very comfortable in social environments and meeting new people, and people love to be around them. And when people come around you, it's like you freeze up. You don't know what to say, and you feel like you're always putting your foot in your mouth and you're never quite sure what to do, and you feel like you wanna be great and you wanna make a mark in the world that way, but it's just not happening for you. Or maybe for you it's in business, and you've worked really hard to try and build your career, but it seems like every time there was a deal that would have really catapulted you to greatness, it was just out of reach. The client backed out at the last minute, or the client goes bankrupt, or the entire industry falls apart before your eyes, and you see someone else and great things happen in their career, and you recognize they just happen to be in the right place at the right time and the right things happen to them, but for you, it was just out of reach. We all have this hope. We all love underdog stories because we want to play a significant role in the world around us. We want to be a part of something great. And yet, man, it's just hard to know what that looks like. How do I end up in the right place at the right time? How do I make that happen for me? And some of us are frustrated right now in life because we're not where we thought we would be at this stage in our life. When we were younger, we had visions of grandeur and we thought something amazing would happen through our life. And now we're 40 or we're 45 and we're recognizing that we're just not where we thought we would be. And so I think that's why we resonate with these underdog stories. And we're going to look at an underdog story today, but I want you to understand as you read this, as we read this together, and to be encouraged because I believe that God has something great for you. I believe that God has a unique purpose for your life, for your experience, for your talent, for your personality. God has something great. And unique, by the way, does not mean unusual. Unique means one of a kind. That there is a God who designed you, who knows everything about you, and has a specific plan for your life. And it's not a plan for mediocrity, it's a plan for greatness. It's a plan for really, really cool things to happen through your life. And so the question that you have to ask yourself this morning is, am I willing to do the great thing that God has in mind for me? In other words, am I trying to get God on board with my agenda, or am I willing to ask the question and investigate and find out what is God's agenda? What is the great thing that God would like to do through me? And so in a minute, we're going to look at this story. It comes from 1 Samuel 17. Samuel was a prophet. He lived about 3,000 years ago. Back in the time when Israel was really just kind of getting their feet under them as a new nation after they had settled in the land of Palestine. And Samuel records this early history of Israel. And the things that he writes down, the story that we're going to look at today, these are actual events. Archaeological finds back up the circumstances around these stories. And so we know that these aren't just invented, that these are actual stories that outline the history of the nation of Israel. And the character we're going to look at today was the youngest in his family. His full-time job was the least glorious in his household, but you don't know him for his full-time job. You know him for his volunteer role. And so we thought this would be a great story to look at today as we celebrate our volunteers and everything that you guys do around this church. And we're going to start with reading in 1 Samuel chapter 17 with verse 12. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. Jesse had 8 sons, and in Saul's time, he was very old. Jesse's 3 oldest sons had followed Saul to the war. The firstborn was Eliab, the second Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. Now the Philistine is this giant named Goliath. And the Philistines are these people. The word Philistine just means people of the sea. So we don't know exactly where the Philistines originated from. They could have come from Greece. They might have come from Troy. But they had arrived from the Mediterranean Sea, and they were kind of pushing in from the westward boundary of Israel. And they were a constant source of tension during this time in Israel's formation. And they were a constant source of tension because they were a bigger, stronger people, but also they had brought with them, as they had come from the sea, they had brought with them a brand new technology, because Israel was on the boundary right then. This is in the timeline of history. We're right on the border between the Bronze Age and the Iron Age. And the Philistines have tools made of iron and weapons made of iron, and the Israelites are still fighting with weapons made of bronze. And so the Philistines are a formidable force. Their weapons are stronger, the people are bigger, and now here they've gathered these two forces. You've got the army of Israel encamped on one side of the valley, and you've got the army of Philistines camped on the other side of the valley, and every day this giant Goliath, bigger than all the other Philistines, bigger than all the Israelites, he would come out and he would lay down a challenge that if one of the Israelites would come out and face him, that they would fight champion versus champion, and the outcome of the battle would be determined by the fight of those two men instead of thousands of people having to shed blood. And he's been offering this challenge every morning and every evening for 40 days and 40 nights. Some scholars think that he intentionally was doing this in the morning and the evening because this is when the Israelites would have their prayer time. And he was intentionally disrupting their time to honor their one true God. So he comes out and offers this challenge every day. Now meanwhile, David's back home, and Jesse, his father, says to David, take this ephah, that's a bushel, take this bushel of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are and bring back some assurances from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines. Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of a shepherd, loaded up, and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry. So that's just kind of funny to me. This has been going on for 40 days, and yet every morning the Israelites, they still run out to the battle lines, and they shout the battle cry. The same thing plays out every single day. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines, facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of the supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were. So here they are on the front lines of battle, but there's nothing really happening. And so David begins this conversation with his brothers to catch up and find out how they are. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance. And David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. So every day, they battle cry, run out, face Goliath, face the Philistines. Goliath gives this challenge, turn around, run away. Not very impressive. Now the Israelites have been saying, do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel. See, some of you would have signed up if you had known exemption from taxes was part of the deal. And David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Now, here's just an important distinction. It's a small, subtle difference, but I think it's important. When the soldiers are telling David about this challenge that Goliath makes every day, they say he comes out to defy Israel. But when you hear David ask the question, after he's heard the words out of Goliath's mouth, David asks the question, "Who is this Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" You see, David is that shepherd boy who wrote many of the Psalms that we enjoy today. Maybe you enjoy Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." The Psalms are written from the voice of this boy who, with a lot of time alone in the field to spend thinking about God and singing songs to God and enjoying a relationship, a personal relationship with his heavenly Father, David has come to understand that the God of Israel is different from any of the gods that the nations around them worship. The nations around them, they all worship multiple gods. They all have stories that are kind of stranger than fiction about the things that these gods do and how these gods were responsible for the world's current condition and how it came to be. And meanwhile, Israel worships this one true God. It's what sets Israel apart. It's why God designed Israel to sit at the crossroads of history and be a light to the rest of the nations. And David understands this from a very personal standpoint. And when he hears David hurl his insults, he hears Goliath hurl his insults, he doesn't understand these insults to be aimed at Israel as a country or to be aimed at the army of Israel. He understands these insults for what they truly are: an insult, an affront, an offense against the one true God that David worships. And so David steps forward to volunteer to fight against this Philistine. And if you know the story, you know that he then goes to meet with the king, Saul, and Saul offers him his armor, but it's too big, it's too heavy for David. And so David leaves all that behind and he goes with what he's comfortable with. He goes with what he knows. And he goes with nothing but a slingshot because he is so confident that this is God's battle. It's not David's battle. David's not the one that's been offended. Israel's not the one that's been offended. The army isn't who has been offended. God has been offended, and he is there to represent the most powerful being that ever has been. And so he's confident to step out with nothing more than a slingshot. Verse 40. Then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose 5 smooth stones from the stream. Do you understand the significance of 5 stones to go into this battle? Because it's Cinco de Mayo, right? We had to work so hard to find a verse that had 5 in it to use today. But so he chooses 5 smooth stones from the stream, and he puts them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, he approaches the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals." But David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and this is key, this is why David's in the battle, and the world will know that there is a God in Israel." See, David understood his role. He understood Israel's role. He understood what would be recorded in history, what would be remembered, It wasn't about David, it's about God. That the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And those gathered here will know that this is not, that it's not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. Now see, I don't know about you, if this is the first time you've heard this story, and maybe you thought it was just a metaphor up to this point, or maybe like me, you've heard this story since you were little. But you know what? I think we were taught a lot of wrong lessons about this story when we were growing up. Because I was taught that this story is about this idea that our God is big enough that there's no Goliath in your world that God can't defeat. That's not what the story's about at all. I was taught that if you've got a Goliath-sized problem in your world, then you just need to call upon the one true God and he will help you defeat your Goliath. And that's not what this story's about at all. In fact, David understood this very important phrase, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give it to you. The battle is the Lord's. The battle wasn't David's. David's not the offended party. David's not the one who has to go and face Goliath. David understood from the first time he heard Goliath hurl the insults, he understood he is insulting the one true God. This is God's fight. This isn't my fight. This is God's fight. But I'm willing to step forward, and I'm willing to be a volunteer, and I'm willing to get into the ring with Goliath because God's about to do something great here. Because I know the one true God, and he's not just going to sit by and let the Philistines win this battle. He's not going to allow his name to be insulted like this. God's going to do something great. I might as well volunteer and be on the front row and see what God's going to do here. So the message from this story is not that little people can do great things if we just put our minds to it and try hard enough. The message to the story is not that God wants to help you defeat the Goliaths in your world. No. It's that the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. That the God of Israel is the one true God. Now, a lot of people were asking at that time, you know, I don't know if I'm called. I don't know if that's ever been the question in your mind, but you have thousands of Israelite soldiers, and they're coming out with a battle cry, running to the battlefront every day. And they stand there, and this giant comes out, and he issues the same challenge twice a day. They were all called to fight this battle. And yet, none of these soldiers stepped forward. None of their commanding officers stepped forward. The king of Israel, who was the tallest person by a head, Samuel writes down for us, that he, the tallest man in Israel by a head, would not step forward and face Goliath in this battle. But there's a little shepherd boy. He's young, he's inexperienced, he's outmatched, he's underarmed, and he is willing to go up against this giant because he understands we're all called, but somebody has got to step forward and volunteer. Somebody's got to be willing to face this giant in battle. Let me ask you something. Let me ask you this. If David had not stepped forward to volunteer, what do you think would have happened in this battle? I mean, do you really think that God would have allowed Goliath and the Philistines to win this battle? I don't think so. I think that if David hadn't stepped forward, that there might have been another 10 days go by, or another 20 days, or another 40 days go by, but someone would have stepped forward and volunteered, and we wouldn't know the name of David today. It wouldn't be David that we would all be talking about. It would be whoever was willing to step forward, because the battle wasn't David's to fight and win. The battle belonged to the Lord. So the question that you and I have to wrestle with as we think about, what does it look like to be the underdog? What does it look like for us to achieve greatness in our world? But first we have to ask the question, am I willing to step forward and to volunteer? Am I willing to get out of the ranks of everyone who's been called and be the lone person who says, I'm willing to be the volunteer in this situation? Now, you might have a lot of objections to that. You might think, Rich, if you knew my past, there you would know that there is no way that God can use me. Or you might think, Rich, if you knew my current circumstances, if you knew what was going on in my world right now, I mean, maybe someday when I get all this cleaned up, then maybe God can use me, but right now, I'm a mess. And there is no way that God can use me right now. Or maybe it's just personal characteristics that you just feel like you cannot overcome. That you're just wired in such a way that you frustrate yourself, you frustrate the people around you, and you think, I don't know that God can use me because of the way I am. Let me tell you something. Read your Bibles, because it is full of all these stories of God taking people who are completely messed up. Because God's understood from the very, very beginning that the most effective way to reach broken people with a message of hope is to give them an example of broken people who've been rescued by hope. And so you look back through the Bible and you see these stories. You see that, you know, we see stories about Jonah who ran from God. We see stories of Job whose whole life was a train wreck. We see stories about Noah who drank too much. Rahab was a prostitute. Moses was a murderer and had a speech impediment. Jesus' disciples, they're some of the worst examples you can look at. Peter denied him 3 times. In fact, most of Jesus' closest followers didn't even believe the stuff that Jesus taught until after he was crucified, buried, and rose again. The whole story of the Bible is about these ragtag people, these underdogs, these people who have all kinds of hangups in their past, in their present, in their character. In fact, David, you know, we've got this really cool story about David, but David was a wreck when it came to managing his family and his home life. And yet we know David for this story because he was willing to step out and volunteer and say, God, how might you use me? And so today, we're celebrating these volunteers that are sitting next to you today, volunteers that are with your kids right now in Wombland and Upstreet and Inside Out, volunteers that helped you find a parking space and greeted you when you got here, volunteers that are making sure that the sound and the lights and the video and everything's just right in these environments. We're celebrating them because they have been willing to step out and to say, I get it. I get it that God's not concerned about my past. He's not concerned about my circumstances. He's not concerned about my character. In fact, God's not even hung up on the fact that I'm not sure that I believe everything that they teach at this place. We have volunteers that serve in non-teaching roles all around here, and they help out in such critical ways. And we have frank, open conversations about the fact that they're skeptical. They're skeptical about the stuff that we teach here. They're not sure that they can trust the Bible. They're not sure that Jesus actually rose from the dead. But they love what's going on here, and they love being a part of things, and they love the team that they're a part of, and they keep serving week after week. And we're okay with that. And you know why we're okay with that? Because Jesus was surrounded by people who didn't get it, who were skeptics, who were still asking a lot of questions. And people who are nothing like Jesus loved to be around Jesus. And it's our hope that you love to be here and around the teams of people that make this place happen. So it doesn't matter whether you feel prepared or not. It doesn't matter if you feel called or not. I don't know if you guys grew up in an environment where you heard that expression, like someone has been called into ministry. It's usually said with a real serious tone of voice. I remember the first time someone asked me, you know, Stephanie and I both, we really didn't know how God might use our lives when we were in college. But as a college sophomore, I started volunteering at a local church to help out with middle school and high school students. And as I started to volunteer with students, I found out that I just really enjoyed working with high school students. That had been such a critical age in my life, and I wanted to help other students discover that there was a God that had great plans for their life. And so I enjoyed coming alongside them and watching that happen. And by the time that Stephanie and I were in our early 20s, we were both working full-time, working with high school students. And I remember being about 24 years old and being approached by someone in the church, and they asked me, you know, when did you receive your calling? And I wasn't prepared for that question. I didn't know how to answer that. I was like, well, I interviewed a bunch of times, and then one day they called. And I said yes, and so here I am. And I don't know if you've heard Andy tell his story, but Andy has a similar story. You know, he grew up in a pastor's home, and there was a lot of talk about the calling of God in your life and receiving the calling to ministry. And you know, Andy talks about the fact that he was a college student. He was driving in the car with his dad one time, and he really was feeling like he wanted to work with high school students in the church full time, but he hadn't had this experience, this calling. And he said to his dad, "Dad, do you have to be called to do ministry, or can you just volunteer?" And his dad said, "You know what? I think it's okay. You can just volunteer." Think of the impact that Andy has had in our lives as our teaching pastor because he was willing to step forward and to volunteer. Look, we are all called. If you're someone who says that you follow after the one true God, if you're someone who says that Jesus Christ has made a difference in your life, then you're called. The question is, will you step forward? Will you volunteer? Now, let me give you a picture of what this looks like in our lives today. We do this thing here when we baptize people where we ask them to record a video and tell us their story a little bit. We do this because it makes baptisms so much more personal if we hear someone's story. And it also takes a lot of the stress off the individual that's being baptized that day because they can just show up and enjoy the celebration. They don't have to do any public speaking that's already been done. And we baptize students around here as young as 7 or 8 years of age. And just recently, we were recording some videos a couple weeks ago with middle and high school students. And it was so cool as I sat there behind the camera and listened to them tell their stories, that they would talk about what God was doing in their life and the fact that their relationship with their Heavenly Father had gotten to the point that they wanted to go public with their faith and tell people that Jesus is Lord of their life. And as they're telling this story, most of them would mention their small group leaders and the impact that their small group leaders had had on them. And some of these small group leaders started with them when they were in fourth grade. And they've tracked with them as elementary students and middle school students, and now they're heading on to be high school students. And these same small group leaders have been investing in their lives. And these are small group leaders who are willing to say, you know, I don't have it figured out. I don't have all the answers for these kids. In a lot of ways, I am outgunned, I am outmanned, I'm intimidated by students, but I am willing to take my little bit of life experience, and I'm willing to take the little bit that God has taught me along the way and what I've learned about His faithfulness, and I'm willing to share that in the life of a middle school student or a high school student. And it's made a huge impact on these students' lives. Something that seems small, that seems insignificant, has made a huge difference in the lives of these students. One of my favorite stories around here is from a family that started visiting Access Church recently. They actually came for the very first time on kind of a whim. He had been on staff for a number of years at another church here in Jacksonville. And he had been one of the staff pastors there and recently transitioned from being on staff at this church to leading a local organization here in Jacksonville. And so he was still, the family still attending that church, but he was no longer on staff. And one Sunday morning, as they're getting ready for church, his wife said, just kind of on a whim, you know, we could go to church anywhere this morning. Like, we've got a freedom that we haven't had in a long time, and we could go to church at any church in Jacksonville. Is there some place maybe that we just want to try just for fun, just to kind of mix it up and do something different? And the husband responded, you know what, I've always wanted to check out Access Church. I want to see what they're doing over there. I think it'd be kind of cool to see what a North Point partnership in Jacksonville looks like. So let's go over and try Access for one Sunday. So they told the kids that they were going to try something different, and the kids were reluctant. Because, you know, it's a big deal for kids. One of their son was 4 years old. Their daughter was in kindergarten or first grade. And it's a big deal for kids to come into a new environment and meet new people. So they showed up, and everybody outside was very nice to them. They came down the hallway, and their son got dropped off in the four-year-old room. And the small group leader met him and was super nice and everything, but he was a little unsure. Bottom lip sticking out a little bit. Then they went down, and they checked their daughter in to Upstreet K came in here, enjoyed this environment. Everything was fine. Got the kids afterward. It seemed like they had a good time. They're on the way home and they're having a conversation about, you know, their experience at church, what they thought about the video communicator and how that worked and all that sort of thing. And all in all, everybody had a good experience. Nothing over the top, but a good experience. And then a couple days later, a note comes in the mail. Such a little thing. But they get this handwritten note, and it's from one of the kids' small group leaders. Loved having you, loved meeting you. Thanks so much for being there. Here's my cell phone number and my email address. If there's any way that I can answer any questions or be of help to you, feel free to reach out. And they were like, wow, that's such a little thing. But God used that in a big way. So they thought that was neat. That was a nice touch. So the next Sunday, they're getting ready to go to church, and they're planning to go back to their normal church, and they're heading out the door and getting in the car, and one of the kids says, wait, which church are we going to? And mom and dad are like, well, you know, we're going to our church. And the kids, they have a revolt. They say, no, we want to go to Access Church. We had fun and everybody there was so nice to us. And so, you know, parents, we're not easily pushed around by our kids. We, you know, if you're a good parent, you're principled and you kind of stay the course, and it's the, you know, this is for the kids will fall in line. So they did what any one of us would have done in that moment. They caved, they gave the kids whatever they wanted that would make them stop crying, and they turned the car and they went to the Access Church. And again, they're thinking, well, it's, you know, it's two Sundays, it's not forever, it's two Sundays. They show up, they come down this hallway, and they get to the four-year-old classroom, and their son, who had had his, you know, a little bit of a rough time the week before, he's a little uncertain, he gets to that doorway, he's ready to walk in, and Lynn, the small group leader for those four-year-olds, she gets down on one knee and she calls him by name. Oh, I just made eye contact with Lynn. And she calls him by name. Such a little thing, but such a huge impact on that family, because she took the time to care about that little boy. And she said, hey, we had a rough week last week. It's gonna be better this week. We're gonna have a good day. And he went right in to the four-year-old classroom. And then they walk down the hall a few more steps and they get to the kindergarten classroom. And their daughter is on the way in, and Reynold and Kim are the small group leaders for the kindergarten and first graders. And Reynold and Kim greet them at the door and not only remember the little girl's name, but they remember the parents' names. And now the parents are absolutely blown away. And they look at each other and they think, okay, we've got to give this a serious chance. This is impressive. When we were on staff at this other church and people there couldn't remember our names, and we're here second Sunday, and these people clearly are working hard to be intentional about relationships. Man, it's just such a little thing, but God uses it in a big way, because the battle isn't our battle. This isn't our thing. We're not looking for God to make us great. It's God's thing. Instead of asking God to help make us great in whatever arena we're trying to be great, these volunteers have understood, I'm going to look around and I'm going to find out where there's a battle that God is already going to win, where God is going to do something great. And then I'm going to position myself so that I get to be right there on the front lines of what's going on in that environment. And so about 3 months after this, the dad calls me and he asks if we can have lunch. And so we go and we sit down for lunch, and he tells me this whole story. And at the end, he says, he says, I don't know how it happened exactly, but I guess we go to your church now, because we've been coming every Sunday and our kids won't let us leave. So how do we get plugged in? How do we get involved? How do we get connected? Thank you so much for the role that you are having as volunteers to have incredible impact in the lives of kids and adults around here. And if you're not a part of this and you would love to be a part of this, we want to extend an open invitation to you and say, we would love for you to be a part of one of these teams. Not because we're desperate, we've got to have more people, or we're trying to strong arm you into something or make you feel guilty, but because there's this incredible opportunity to be on the front lines of what God is doing here. The battle isn't ours. The battle belongs to the Lord. We're not asking God to step into our world and help us defeat our Goliath. We are coming into God's arena and saying, what can we do to be a part of this great story that God is writing? Do you realize that David later went on to be king of Israel? And under David's reign, Israel experienced more success, militarily and politically and economically under David and his son Solomon than has ever been experienced in the history of Israel. And yet, most people today don't know David for being king. They don't know David for being a shepherd. They know David for this one volunteer role that he had, where he stepped forward in an arena where everybody was called, but only one would volunteer. And he stepped forward and said, hey, this is God's thing, not my thing. And I'm going to join the battle that God's fighting and be a part of something bigger that God is already doing. So here's what we would love for you to do today. First of all, we want you to join us in celebrating our volunteers and saying thank you. There's a table out in the lobby and it's got some note cards, and just a simple way that you can say thank you to our volunteers is to go out there and spend a few minutes and to write on a note card. And maybe you don't know the last name of the volunteer that you want to thank. Maybe you don't know their name at all. You just know that it's you know, Melia's small group leader. And if you just write that on there, we will try to make sure that the right person gets that card. But we would love to have you come alongside us and celebrate our volunteers and say thank you for the great stuff that they are doing to create environments around here that our kids love coming back to, that adults love inviting their friends to. So help us out, write a note. The other thing is, we wanna celebrate you as volunteers, and so we've got this tent set up outside to celebrate Cinco de Mayo, and we've got a nacho bar in there, and we've got a margarita machine, and we're giving away branded Access Church water bottles, and I think we've got branded margarita glasses, which I know that makes us the only church in town that's giving away branded margarita glasses. But we just want to have fun, and we want to celebrate you. And so Cinco de Mayo was an excuse for us to do that, but we want to say thank you for all you've done here. So if you're a volunteer, that's a VIP tent. That's for volunteers only. But if you really feel sucked in by the nachos or the margaritas, then we have a solution to that. We have some cards that you can fill out. You might have gotten one on the way in. If not, there's some out there in the tent, but you can fill out a card, give us your information, and Doug Hurley, who is our director of group life here at Access Church, Doug is out there in the tent, and he is ready to meet you and to talk you through what it looks like to be a volunteer here at Access Church, because the reality is that God's doing something crazy here, and it has been so much fun to be on the front lines of it, and it's just about to get crazier and bigger and better. And every year in the fall, God brings us a whole host of new people. And we want to get ready now for what God's going to do in the fall. So we would love to have you jump on board now so that we can train you and equip you and put you in the right positions. You can shadow other leaders and kind of get prepared so that in the fall, when we have a bunch of new families that come and check out Access Church, we are completely ready to give them the best experience possible. And we'd love to have an opportunity to be on the front lines of that kind of experience. So those are just two things that you can do today. We'd love to have you out in the tent, meet you, and help you get connected that way. And to think about how God might use this experience to do something great in your life. If you've been waiting for that underdog moment, if you've been waiting for that time when God takes a seemingly insignificant person and uses them in a significant way to impact the world around you, this could be that opportunity. And we would love for you to jump in and be a part of that. Let's pray. God, thank you so much that you have allowed us to be a part of what you're doing in the world around us today. Thank you so much that you are that you're doing something in the lives of kids, that you're doing something in the lives of adults, that we've seen you turn marriages around in this organization. We've seen you do some amazing things. And we recognize, God, that this isn't the only place where we can volunteer. But this is a place where we are focused, absolutely focused, on leading people into a growing relationship with you. And so I ask that you would encourage some of us today to take a step forward and to be a part of what you're doing here and to be a part of what you want to do in the lives of kids and in the lives of grown-ups to lead them closer to you. We pray all this in your name.